Hey guys, Darren Bentley here. And before we get started, I wanted to make a special announcement. We have officially opened registration for the Private Money Conference, which is a 3-day live event where you will learn directly from Jay and his team how to raise thousands of dollars in private money to fund all of your real estate deals. Now, in today's changing market, more and more people are losing out to other investors because most of those investors have the cash to fund these deals. Did you know that you are missing out on 87% of the real estate deals out there because you don't have access to private money? Sadly, most real estate investors don't even know this is the reason why they continue to lose deal after deal. And with everything that's happening in the market today, you absolutely need every advantage available to you. And having access to unlimited amounts of private money is your big advantage. So to register for this live event, head over to jayconner.com/event. Again, that is jayconner.com, jayconner.com/event, where you will be able to lock in your seat for this live in-person 3-day event, which takes place June 12th, 13th, and the 14th in beautiful North Carolina. But you got to be fast because there are a limited number of seats, and when they are gone, they're gone. So again, to take advantage of this incredible event and to learn how to raise all the private money you'll ever need directly from Jay Conner and his team, head over to jayconner.com/event. Again, that is jayconner.com, jayconner.com/event. Now let's get into today's episode.
And they asked me, they said, Jay, what do you think is the most important characteristic or attribute of a real estate investor to be successful? And here's the answer: resiliency. Resiliency. I mean, you know, have I lost money on a deal? Yeah. Have any of my private lenders lost money? No.
If you're a real estate investor and are wondering how to raise and leverage private money to make more profit on every deal, then you're in the right place. On Raising Private Money, we'll speak with new and seasoned investors to dissect their deals and extract the best tips and strategies to help you get the money, because the money comes first. Now here's your host, Jay Conner.
All right. What is up, my peeps? Joshua Smith here with another GSD Mode podcast interview. Every single week, I interview top real estate professionals, top entrepreneurs, and straight up top badasses out there dominating their space. And today, guys, we got another amazing, epic, special guest here on the podcast. Actually, a repeat guest. I was actually looking at the time frame before we jumped on here, and it was about almost 5 years ago today that we did our last interview. And time flies. It feels like it was yesterday. I'm really excited to have our repeat guest on the show, or back on the show. But to give you guys some context before we jump in here, our guest today, Jay Conner. So he's been buying and selling real estate since 2003 in a population of only 40,000 people, with profits averaging $71,000. He's rehabbed over 450 homes, been involved in over $52 million of transactions for the past 7 years, worked completely automated, which I'm excited to get in today about his VA process and that automation process, but created a 7+ year per year income where he works less than 10 hours a week. He's consulted one-on-one with over 2,000 real estate investors. He's raised over $2.1 million in less than 90 days with private money when the banks cut him off. Commercial developer, also national speaker, best-selling author, all these things that we will jump into. So really excited and honored to have Jay Conner back on the podcast. Welcome back.
Joshua, thank you so much for having me to come back and talk about my subject that I'm so passionate about, and that is private money and how private money puts you in control of your business and in the driver's seat.
Yeah. When I know anybody that's watching or listening, I'll have a link below to our first podcast that we did about 5 years ago. We went really deep on this, and I'm sure we'll go deep again today because money's changing, cost of capital's changing, a lot's changing in the investment landscape. I mean, we had certain investor clients that were buying, you know, just through us, 20 plus properties a month that over the last 12 months just completely stopped, you know, right? So things have changed. So I'm really excited to kind of get some updates from you, you know, on that. But, you know, for those that didn't catch our first podcast, or that just don't have, you know, this is their first experience with you. You know, give us just a quick backstory, man. I mean, I know you've been in this game for a long time. So what led you into real estate investing, and just kind of give us that quick snapshot?
Sure, Joshua. I was actually raised in the housing industry. My dad, Wallace Connor, actually up until the late 1980s had the largest retailing company of mobile homes, manufactured homes in the nation. So I grew up, you know, helping people own a home. That was in an industry of affordable housing. But anyway, the consumer financing on that product virtually went away. So in 2003, I knew if I ever got out of that, I wanted to get into single family houses. Now, I've done commercial developments as well. I've got a full shopping center paid for, you know, free and clear now. I've done condominiums, but my focus has been single family houses. So from 2003 until 2009, the first 6 years that I was doing this business, focusing on single family houses, Joshua, I relied on the local banks. I relied on commercial money, institutional money. That's all I knew to do. That's all I knew to do. So I remember it like it was yesterday. I picked up my telephone, and believe it or not, here in North Carolina, we still have handsets that have like cords attached to them. Can you believe? I know some people don't even know what that is. But anyway, I picked up my telephone, Joshua. I called my banker at BB&T. His name was Steve, and I've been doing business with him, done lots of deals for 6 years from 2003 to 2009. And I learned very quickly, Joshua, that my line of credit had been shut down. I mean, I had two houses under contract. I didn't know that my line of credit had been shut down. So I didn't know there was a global financial crisis going on until now. I got a crisis. I can't fund these two deals. Well, my definition of coincidence is God's way of staying anonymous. I learned in less than 2 weeks of that experience about private money and what private money is and how it works. And I'm not talking hard money lender, brokers. I'm talking private money, doing business with individuals that would loan me money either from their investment capital and or their retirement accounts. So I learned about self-directed IRAs. So I put a program together to where I started teaching people that I had a relationship with in my cell phone, whatever. I started teaching people about my private lending program. So there's one big difference. I put my program together. You know, when I was borrowing money from the banks, they made the rules. They set the interest rate. They set the frequency of payments. I put my own program together that I started teaching people how they could earn high rates of return safely and securely by investing in my deals, either from their investment capital or their retirement accounts. So when I started teaching people what it was, and by the way, I've never asked anybody for money. I've never pitched a deal and done all these deals. We'll talk about how I do that. So I was able to raise $2,150,000 in less than 90 days. I closed those two deals. And Joshua, since that time in January of 2009, I've never missed out on a deal for not having the money.
Yep. No, I love it. I love it. Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of our listeners are probably familiar with hard money, you know, but a lot of people, when they hear hard money or private money, and I know we talk about this, you know, deeply in our last podcast, but again, just in case people hadn't listened to this, can you explain the difference? Because there's a lot of confusion. And, you know, a lot of our audience are, you know, real estate agents and representing investors. And, you know, so what is the difference between hard money and private money?
Yeah. So the first big difference is hard money is typically a broker of money. To what a hard money lender does is goes out and raises private money from individuals for their fund. And people will invest in the hard money lender's fund. And then the hard money lender turns around and loans it out to us real estate investors and, you know, charges points, origination fees, charges a higher interest rate, and et cetera. So the first big difference is private money is doing business with human beings, individuals, right? Hard money is institutional. Now, here's some big contrast between the two. First of all, interest rate. Now, when COVID came along, hard money lenders actually shut down. They weren't even lending at all. And I started having more private money chasing me than ever before. Prior to COVID, there was $18 trillion in cash sitting in people's individual retirement accounts, just sitting there. This side of COVID, Joshua, as of 2 months ago, $31 trillion in cash sitting in people's retirement accounts. So I'm doing business with individuals. Interest rate, 14% is now the national average that a hard money lender is charging. Institutional money is almost up to 8%, between 7% and 8%. Private money right now is still at 8%. interest only or interest accrued, no principal and interest payments. And I've been paying my private lenders that same interest amount ever since 2009. So the interest rate's a lot lower than hard money lending. Number two is called origination fees. Origination fees are going to average between 3% and 4% when you're borrowing from a hard money lender. In my world, no origination fees, no points. I've never paid a point or an origination fee using private money. Thirdly is what we call extension fees. So, you know, typically a hard money lender is going to have a length of the note on a flip of maybe 6 months, 9 months, maybe 12 months. Well, there's no rush to pay it back in this world of private money. My terms are either 2 years or 5 years, so there's no rush. Well, if you haven't paid off your hard money lender in 6 months or 9 months, they'll extend your note most of the time. But what do they want? More money. They have extension fees. I know one hard money lender right now, if you haven't paid them off in 12 months, they will extend your note for 90 days, but charge an additional 3 points, 3%. In this world of private money, I've never paid an extension fee. Another big difference is how much money are you going to be advanced when you buy? If you're borrowing from institutional money or hard money, they're going to loan you typically around 65 to 80% of the purchase price. In this world of private money, you get 100% of your purchase price. And if you are rehabbing, you get 100% of your rehab. So it just really, really is a big, big difference. Puts you in the driver's seat of your business. Private money is so much more easier and user-friendly. When you use private money, there's no appraisals required. Wow, there's an appraisal required on institutional money. No appraisals are required. Your credit makes no difference. Your credit score doesn't come into play at all. No financial statements, no verification of income when you're using private money. And on top of that, again, as I said, you're making the rules. We're not limited to accredited investors. We can borrow from anybody due to Dodd-Frank rule changing, F506B. So there's just so many reasons as to why it's so much easier to use private money. You can close deals so fast. All my offers, I offer to close in 7 days, 7 days with private money. And, you know, with hard money, typically that's going to be at least 3 weeks. Institutional money, the bank could be even longer. So big, big, big difference. You know, one big difference is that when you're borrowing institutional money or hard money, you like, you know, get on your hands and knees, put your hands underneath your chin and you say, please fund my deal. Please fund my deal. Right. In this world of private money, there's no asking. There's no begging. There's no chasing. There's no selling. There's no persuading. In this world of private money, instead of asking for a mortgage, we're offering a mortgage by teaching people what it's all about.
Yep. No, I love that. So then, all right, so you were in mobile homes. You made the transition to single family. You know, for the longest time, you know, you're big, big players. You know, you're big and big investors, your funds, your Black Rocks of the world and Blackstone. I mean, they, you know, are buying a ton of commercial. And then, you know, we started seeing about 2012 or so, you know, them getting into the single family game. And then, you know, of course, as up to about a year ago, you know, a lot of these big institutions were making that transition big time to buying all this single family, which it looks like that was a, you know, smart decision because in a lot of these big cities, you know, commercial markets are kind of a mess. You know, what did you see, you know, because that was a right play. Like how did you know or what to go that path so early on, even before some of these brilliant funds?
Well, I was sort of, as far as the private money goes, I was sort of forced into it. You know, I just didn't wake up one morning and say, hey, I think I'll go raise me some private money. I mean, here's the deal, Joshua. I was a guest on another podcast the other day, and they asked me, they said, Jay, what do you think is the most important characteristic or attribute of a real estate investor to be successful? And here's the answer, resiliency. Resiliency. I mean, you know, have I lost money on a deal? Yeah. Have any of my private lenders lost money? No, because I borrow at a conservative loan to value. I only borrow up to 75% of the after repaired value. But back to your question, Joshua, I wouldn't be here with you on your show unless I had pushed through because of that difficulty, right? I mean, growth takes place in the valley. Growth doesn't take place when everything is just hunky-dory, peachy keen, right? So there I had that experience of, man, I just lost my line of credit. So it's not like what I know, but who you know. I asked myself, when I hung up the phone, who do I know that can help me with my problem? And so I have a really good friend, Jeff, that lived in Greensboro, North Carolina at the time. And I called him up. He was investing in real estate. And I told him what had happened. He says, well, have you ever heard of private money? I said, no. He said, you ever heard of self-directed IRAs? And, you know, introducing people that have a retirement account, introduce them to a self-directed IRA company to where they can loan you money out on your deals, tax-free or tax-deferred. I'd never heard of all that. So this private money, my experience of being cut off from the bank, was the biggest blessing in disguise I've ever had in my business. So it was because I had to change the way that I was doing business that I ended up doing business now the way I do with private money.
Yep. No, I love that. So yeah, just adapting and moving with the changes. And all right, so then from there, okay, so, you know, last conversation, you know, that, I mean, that was all before COVID, before lockdowns, before.
Yeah, we didn't even know anything about COVID.
Yeah. And then now, you know, like, I mean, with the economy and interest rates and cost of capital going through the roof and, you know, lots changed, but it sounds like your model hasn't changed.
It hasn't. And well, here's one thing that's changed. I got more money chasing me today than ever before. Ever since COVID, I mean, like, I got a problem, Joshua. I can't invest all the money I got available to me, right? I mean, which would you rather have, a problem of deals and no money, or too much money and not enough deals?
Yep, the latter.
it's like, you know, it's like a great place to be. So, you know, the reason there's more private money available now than ever before, other than what I just said, there's $31 trillion in people's retirement accounts. They don't know what to do with it. But I'll tell you the other big thing, they are scared to death of the stock market.
Yep.
They're scared to death. They don't, I mean, the volatility, I mean, for goodness sakes, I don't care what your political affiliation is, but look what's happened to the stock market in the last 2 years, 2.5 years, right? And so people are looking for a safe, conservative, reliable place to park their investment capital and their retirement funds that's going to give them a decent rate of return safely and securely. That's why there's more private money now available than ever before.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that makes sense. I mean, because, I mean, it's the number one conversation I'm having with your friends and, you know, my mentors of, hey, where do you park your money right now? Because there's no safe place. You know, I mean, people are really resorting to buying T-bills, you know, to make, you know, 4 or 5%, because it's like, you know, you got 40% of the stock, you know, S&P 500 that are zombie companies. You know, you got this massive global debt bubble crisis. Like, we just don't know where to go park it. But okay, like, where can you go get a guaranteed 8% right now? Nowhere, you know, outside. So yeah, you know, other than with Jay.
Exactly. So what does that mean? That means that we got something here. I mean, you learn my private lending program, your listeners that are real estate investing, right? Or you got a bunch of realtors that get their investors introduced to me, and I'll plug them into my program, and all they got to do is duplicate exactly what I do to attract the funding, right? So again, it's all about what's our responsibility. Well, we got to get the word out. I mean, you got millions of people that's got the money and the cash. They don't know what to do. So what do we got to do? We got to put on our teacher hat. And that right there, Joshua, is the secret sauce as to why I've never asked anybody for money to fund my deals. Well, how do I do that? And how did I do it when I started in 2009? I put on my teacher hat and I started teaching people, first of all, in what I call my warm market, people in my cell phone, right? People I go to church with, people in the Rotary Club, Business Networking International, you know, my connections. And I didn't run around town doing a bunch of one-on-ones. One of the first things I did was I put my program together that I was going to teach how people can be a private lender, earn high rates of return safely and securely. And the first thing I did was I hosted a luncheon. I paid for people's lunch. I invited them to the luncheon. And then I did a 30-minute presentation. I didn't pitch any deals. And I taught my private lending program how they can earn high rates of return safely and securely. I taught them in that 30-minute presentation about self-directed IRAs. Joshua, in that one luncheon I raised, without even pitching or selling, I'm informing. I'm teaching people about this opportunity. I raised, without even asking, $969,000 in new funding that I didn't have. And so I teach them And the way I do it, there's no fear of rejection. How can anybody say no to something that you're not asking for? I'm teaching them about the opportunity. I don't have to ask them if they want to get in. I just shut up. Believe it or not, I know how to shut up. So I just shut up after the presentation. Now they're asking me, well, how do I get started in this? So then they tell me how much they have. Okay. And then here's some secret sauce right here now. We separate these conversations of teaching about private money and then having a deal for the private lender to fund. So here's the exact script that I say when I call up a private lender. I'll call them up. I already know how much money they got. They already told me. If it's retirement funds, I introduced them to the self-directed IRA company that they transferred over. I know they got money sitting there waiting to go to work. Here's the exact script. I call them up, have a little chit chat, and I say, and here it is, exact script. I say, I've got great news for you. I can now put your money to work. I've got a house over in Newport with an after-repaired value of $200,000. The funding requires $150,000. Closing's next Thursday. You'll need to have your funds wired to my real estate attorney by next Wednesday. I'm going to have my real estate attorney email you the wiring instructions. End of conversation. Notice I did not ask them, do they want to fund the deal? That's the most stupid question I could ask in the world. Of course they want to fund the deal. They're waiting for the phone call. So let's unpack that script. I told them they got good news for them. I can now put their money to work. I already know how much they got. In this example, they got $150,000. So I told them where the house is located. I didn't give them the physical address. They could care less. They're going to get that on the original promissory note. I got a house in Newport. I tell them the community where it's located. Second thing I told them was the after repaired value. I didn't tell them the purchase price. They could care less. The after repaired value of that house. I tell them the funding requires $150,000. They already told me how much they got. I know they got $150,000. Now notice that's 75% of the after repaired value. I don't borrow more than 75% of the after repaired value. I didn't say 75% of purchase price. That house I'll buy all day long for $100,000 and I'll bring home a $50,000 check for the rehab and some extra equity because I always get a check when I buy without bringing in my own money to the closing table. And then fourthly, I tell them when the closing is. So you see that what I'm sharing? There's no asking. There's no begging. It's informing. It's an educating and then giving them good news. You can put their money to work.
Yep. So, all right. So the limiting beliefs that kick in. Okay, Jay, well, man, you are a great speaker. You obviously can go out there and talk and inspire and, you know, motivate. You have a 20-year track record of doing this where you have all these investors that can vouch for you. I'm brand new, want to get into this. Who's going to give me their money? But you started somewhere.
That's a great question. And here's the answer. And here's a ride or downer. If you, the borrower, if you do not pay your private lender, the property does. That's worth writing down. If you don't pay the lender, the property does. So what does that mean? That means that if for you lose your mind and move to the Caribbean or whatever as the borrower, you see you're not borrowing unsecured funds. You're going to back that note by the real estate that you're buying. You're going to give the lender, that private lender, a mortgage here in North Carolina. It's a deed of trust state. We're going to give them a deed of trust, right? So that gives them the right to foreclose on that property and they're going to get that equity, right? That you'd be giving up. So that's why we do not borrow unsecured funds. Now, some people still don't want to loan to a brand newbie that's never done a deal. Then I say leverage your relationships. I got over 2,000 students that have worked with me, learned how I do private money. And so they leverage my relationship. They leverage the relationship with me. And here's the script. They say, my partner, my business partner and I have now rehabbed over 450 houses. Well, who's the business partner? Me, right? Because we're doing business together. So you're going to give the lender a security. You're going to give them a mortgage or deed of trust, securing their money, right? And in addition to that, for goodness sake, if you're brand new, don't be doing this business on your own to start with by yourself anyway. Work with somebody. Here's a ride or downer. Work with somebody that is in the arena right now. in the arena that's active. Because I tell you, the way I'm finding motivated sellers right now is different than the way I was finding motivated sellers prior to COVID. So work with somebody that knows what's going on.
Yep. Yeah. And we're going to have to dive into that. But before I do, yeah. Okay. So in that, I think that was an important note as well, is if I'm going seeking private money, I get hit by a bus tomorrow, their money's still secured, it's safe, you know, because it's backed by that asset. You know, then from there, I got to imagine with social media the way that it is today, you know, where you're just, you know, talking about example deals, whether it be Facebook Lives that you're doing, YouTube that you're doing. I got to imagine that, because you can only fit so many people, like that room that you did that first time. Okay, maybe you can only fit 20 people in that room. Now, well, you can have thousands of people watching a video. You know, what are some things that you're doing now today and or your students are doing to get that word out there, you know, selling without selling through teaching and attracting those investors?
Real quick, y'all, you guys already know that I don't run any ads on this and I don't sell anything. And so the only ask I can ever ask of you guys is that you help me spread the word so we can help more real estate investors make more money, feed their families, and have the private money they need to fund their deals. And the only way we can do that is if I ask you to rate and review and share this podcast. So the single thing that I ask you to do is you can just leave a review. It'll take you 10 seconds or one type of the thumb. It would mean the absolute world to me. And more importantly, it may change the world of someone else.
Absolutely. So how do you get the word out? Well, there's lots of ways. I just mentioned a private lender luncheon, host a luncheon. Secondly, I have gotten millions of dollars, Joshua, by being an active member in BNI, Business Networking International. Here in little old tiny Morehead City, my total target market's only 40,000 people doing 2 to 3 deals a month at 78,000 average profit. But here in Morehead City, we have a BNI, Business Networking International. And the beautiful thing about BNI is that, like, our group here has only got 22 people in the group, but I'm not looking primarily to raise money from those 22 people. Those 22 people are my mouthpieces out and about in the community. And so now they are referring their connections to me that are looking to get a high rate of return safely and securely. So that's another way that it's very, very easy to network and find. And then we have this category called existing private lenders, people that you don't have to teach, people that are already loaning money out to real estate investors. Well, where do you find them? I can tell you where you find them: at self-directed IRA networking events. That's where you find them. Did you know that at most self-directed IRA companies, account holders, over 70% of them want to loan you, the real estate investor, money? They want to loan you money from their retirement account. And the reason they want to loan you money is because they don't want to be out here negotiating deals. They don't want to be finding motivated sellers. All they want to do is be a passive investor, sit back, you know, watch their retirement accounts grow. So, and again, they are so much more easier to do business with than, say, institutional money, because they know the game, right? So they're not going to be pulling you credit. They're not going to be asking for an appraisal. They're not going to be looking for verification of income. So again, existing private lenders that have accounts at self-directed IRA companies are a great place to network as well.
Then, okay, so you know, you got to get the money. But then from there, okay, you got to be able to perform, because reputations can be lost like that. You know, and you talked about 75% of aftermarket value. I believe in our last podcast, you had mentioned something of, you know, a system that you follow that you're able to teach your students of how to be able to calculate that walk in a property in like within 10 minutes. You know, but what are some important things to know or things to avoid with that, so you don't get yourself or your investors in bad deals? And then next thing you know, and now, like you mentioned, hey, over time, sounds like you've had some bad, you know, you made sure your investors got paid, but not everything's always perfect. But how do you minimize that exposure? Because you got to have some type of product knowledge to make sure that you're getting that component right.
Excellent question, Joshua. It comes down to relationships. Who are you doing business with on your team? You know, for me, I'm not a realtor. So first of all, my relationship with my realtor is very, very important. I got the same realtor that I've been doing business with since 2004. So I rely on him to give me the comparable market analysis in an after repaired value state. So I don't rely on any online resources as far as getting values and comps. I let the professional do it. Now, you know, a lot of people in your audience are already realtors, so they know how to figure what the value is. But then we come to who else is on your team, and that is estimating repairs. Now, I've got a checklist that I teach my students is today, nationwide, how much should interior paint cost? How much should exterior paint cost? And it's all driven off of square footage. How much should luxury vinyl plank cost that you're laying down? You know, how much should the HVAC cost? And my lands ain't that a story right there. You should be paying about half what most HVAC contractors will quote. So the relation comes down to your general contractor right there. So if you're going to be rehabbing, you know, estimating repairs, doing business with a reliable, ethical, trustworthy, and can perform general contractor is very, very important. But you got to know what these line items cost, right? And I've got all that information. How much do these line items cost? So when I'm getting a general contractor bid, here's a writer downer. Don't ever do this. Do not give the general contractor the scope of work and they give you a bid at the bottom of the quote with no line items. I mean, for goodness sakes, I want line items. How much are you charging for interior paint? How much are you charging for knobs and hinges? How much are you charging for an electrical panel box? Because I know and my students know how much that stuff should cost. Now, I want the line item for how much he or she is paying for workers' comp. I know how much that should cost. And what's the line item of their profit? I want my general contractor to make good money, but I ain't paying 25% markup or profit. I'm paying 15%. And so we want all that disclosed. So the easy bottom line answer to your question, Joshua, is it comes down to who you're doing business with, who's on your team, what relationships that you have.
Yeah. Yeah. And I believe, again, I'm trying to go off memory recall here, but you also then give yourself a little bit of wiggle room. What was it, like 10%?
Oh, yeah. Like on my offer?
Yeah. Just so. You know, because like,
oh, you're talking about estimating repairs.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
You get in there sometimes, yeah. You open up a wall, and then you realize, okay, there's something behind you that we didn't anticipate.
Yeah, that's called Murphy.
Yeah, that's right. That's what you call it. Yeah.
So I will guarantee you, Mr. Murphy, who says what can go wrong will go wrong, Mr. Murphy shows up in every property that you do. I don't care what, you know, your general contractors worked out for, but and sometimes Murphy's cousins, aunts, and uncles show up in a property as well that you weren't anticipating. So as a rule of thumb, I always throw in an additional $10,000 additional cost of repairs that I have no idea. But I do know from experience after rehabbing 475 houses now, I do know from experience, typically $10,000 of oops or $10,000 of Murphy money is going to cover the unexpected.
Yep. Awesome. So then, you know, last time we talked, a lot of these, you were doing rent-to-own options. After you bought them, rehabbed them. Is that still kind of the main play here?
No.
Okay.
So let me tell you how we have pivoted since 5 years ago. So here's how we pivoted. Here's the rule of thumb and here's the writer downer. When I pay for a property with all cash, using private money, I cash out. I put it in the multiple listing service and sell it. I'm not going to bury money. However, I still do a lot of rent to owns, and here's how I do it. When I buy on terms from the seller, the FSBO, I sell on terms, i.e. rent to own. So, you know, I buy houses without using private money. I buy houses subject to the existing note, meaning the FSBO for sale by owner agrees to sell me their property, transfer ownership and title into my company, and I agree to make their payments for them, right? You say, well, who in the world would agree to do that? A motivated seller looking for debt relief. That's who would be willing to do that, right? They're in foreclosure. They got payments that are behind. There was a divorce, et cetera. So here's the easy formula. Pay cash, cash out. In other words, pay cash, private money, cash out, sell it. Don't leave money buried. Buy on terms. sell on terms.
Okay. And what was it, just because I believe that it was something like around a 20%?
Yeah. So, that was the case. Yeah. So, man, you got a great memory, or a great assistant that went back and listened to it. So the way it works is, most real estate investors that sell on rent to own or lease purchase leave the rent to own buyers to their own devices to get ready for a mortgage. Well, the likelihood of that happening, I mean, is slim to none, and Slim just got up and left, right? So less than 5% would ever get ready for a mortgage, but we forced them into credit repair and help them get a mortgage. So we were cashing out, and still do, 80%, helping 80% of our rent to own buyers get a mortgage. The other 20%, something happened. They lost a job. They moved out. But I tell you, Joshua, I just got tired of renovating and rehabbing those 20% of houses more than once.
Yeah.
I don't want to rehab them more than once. So when I buy on terms, typically I'm not having to do a rehab. I mean, there's this thing called renovation, and then there's this thing called rent ovation, right?
Yep.
So I don't have to do nearly as much to a home that I'm going to sell on rent to own. Now, I tell you what I love about rent to own versus just straight rental, because on the rent to own program, I'm going to collect a large $10,000 or more non-refundable option fee from the tenant buyer, the rent to own buyer. And after 30 days of them living in the house, they are responsible for all the repairs. There's no toilets. There's no them calling me to repair their house. The rent-to-own buyer has got a owner mentality, okay? So repairs are on them. I love rent-to-own versus long-term just buy and hold.
Yeah, and then, you know, Blackstone, you know, acquired Home Partners of America, and they have a rent-to-own option. It's kind of slowed down, I think, now with cost of capital going up. But I believe that their numbers are something like only 35% actually move forward with the acquisition. So it's kind of the reverse of yours. And it sounds like you're saying like the key there is really because you make sure and work with them through your VIP credit service.
That's right.
Like you don't just, hey, figure this out. Hopefully you can buy.
That's right. And I mean, let's be straightforward about this. Most real estate entrepreneurs that sell on rent to own don't want them to cash out.
Yeah.
Right. And they're not going to help them get a mortgage. I'm here in a small area, small town, Morehead City, North Carolina. It's only got 8,000 people. Word gets around. And plus, I just figure it's the ethical thing to do. They have got a mentality. They want to own this home, and I'm going to help them if they let me. And think of all the goodwill that I have gotten of helping people get a mortgage and a pathway to home ownership that without my team, they would have no hope of ever owning a home and enjoying what people want to enjoy. And that's the American dream.
Yep. Yep. Okay. So you mentioned that how you are finding deals today is vastly different than pre-COVID, which was our last conversation. So walk us through that. What does that look like?
Two big differences. Now, one, I still do, and I've been doing it since 2004. My wife, Carol Joy, and I, we put together our own foreclosure system where we track every foreclosure in our county that we're tracking. When the file opens, we track it. We know exactly where it is in the process of the foreclosure. And then I have 8 letters that we sequentially mail to these people in foreclosure. And of course, all moratoriums are lifted. Hit this year right now, we're going to have more foreclosure starts than we have ever since 2007, 2008, 2009. I still do that. But there's 2 other pieces that I did not do prior to COVID that I now do that has really been a game changer. Number one, top of the list, Google paid ads, pay-per-click ads. And these people, I only need 7 leads to buy a house. Now, of course, I'm not buying anything in the multiple listing service. There ain't nothing in there. I got no inventory. So everything we're buying is what we call off-market or for sale by owners. And we're buying directly from the owners of these properties. So here's the deal. I mean, I got a small sandbox. I'm playing in a small sandbox here. And that's a big benefit, Joshua. I dominate my market. I mean, I am the most consistent game in town. Are there other real estate investors? Of course. But I've got the name presence. So I hired 3 different pay-per-click companies. So I compete with myself. So it's like somebody types in Google here in our local area, buy my house fast, sell my house fast, any of those keyword phrases. I'm the top three people on the page right here in our area. So Google pay per click. Now I'm paying $150 per lead, but let's stop and think about that. Seven times $150, right? So $1,000 and I'm going to make a $78,000. That's like how many pay per clicks? I mean, how many $150 do I want to pay?
70x ROI.
You know? So Google pay per click. Number two, Facebook ads. Facebook ads. So paid, not Facebook post, but paid Facebook ads. Now I need 30 of those to buy a house. I need, because, you know, somebody getting a lead in Facebook in their newsfeed, it's just scrolling up, right? You know, they weren't looking for it. So they're not as qualified as somebody that's looking, you know, for someone to buy their house. But I'm only paying $30 a lead for those. Well, what's 30 times 30? There's your $900 again. How many $30 do you want to pay, you know, in order to get your 78 grand back? So Google pay-per-click, Facebook paid ads are two biggies that I wasn't doing last time you and I talked.
Yep. No, love it. So then, you know, a lot of people today, and when I say people, I'm talking, you know, those realtors, those in the real estate industry, you know, have a thought like, who would go out there and sell their house at the deal that you need to an investor when most markets are still pretty hot, equity's all-time highs, you know, but look, there's still, whether it be certain hardships, like what type of a seller is typically, like that's an ideal seller, ideal situation that you are the perfect fit for?
Either the seller, owner of that property has got a problem or the property itself has got a problem. So most of the properties and houses that we buy do need some type of renovation and rehab. And so you got realtors that, you know, don't even want to list it. I mean, it's not going to bring, you know, the kind of money that, say, a house that's in beautiful condition. And a lot of people, for their own reasons, they just don't want people traipsing through their house. Yeah. They don't want to go through the experience of that. And a lot of people want money today. Here's a big, unique selling proposition that I have when I offer sellers. I can close any deal in 7 days. 7 days. I get more offers accepted that way. I just closed, Joshua, on a house over in Havelock 3 weeks ago. We were talking with the seller. They responded to our marketing. And you know what? They said, okay, we don't want to sell really until August, months down the road. You know how we closed that deal? I said, I'll pay you all cash using private money. I'll pay you all cash in 7 days. And you can live in your house for free through August. No rent. And say, people say, well, Jay, why would you let them stay there for free? I let them stay there for free because I'm going to make over $78,000. I mean, what's, you know, 5 months worth of rent? It don't make any difference. So that's a big thing that private money benefit gives you. You get more offers accepted when you're able to close fast.
Yeah, and time kills deals. So if you would have waited until August, they could have explored other options. They could have...
My guess, Joshua, is I would never have bought that house unless I was able to close it right then.
Yep. And because you're raising private money, you're essentially in full control of how that capital is allocated, when, where.
That's it.
Yep. Yep. So then, all right, so you mentioned with foreclosures, you know, there's so many that, you know, have this, oh, well, you know, there's the biggest debate out there, at least in, you know, my world anyway, is the market going to crash or is it not going to crash? Like, what the hell is going on? You know, but you mentioned something that I'm sure got people's ears perked up of more foreclosures hitting the market and coming online this year than we saw in, you know, since 07, 08. Is that something that you're just seeing in your market? Is that something that, because I know you have students everywhere, is that something that you're kind of seeing across the board? And then just so I don't forget, the follow-up question to that would be, is that just because there's been such a backlog of having 3 years of moratoriums? Like, is that something where it's a concerning thinking, okay, this could become another potential 08?
So it's not going to be another 07, 08, or 09. Of course, those foreclosures back then were for a completely different reason than what we were looking at here. I mean, the foreclosures we got going on here was, you know, because of COVID. So all moratoriums are lifted, right? But I will tell you, the mortgage companies on these foreclosures, they have been sitting on them and not opening them up all at once because they don't want to flood the market. But now they've been sitting on them and they can't sit on them any longer. They got to open them up. And so I'm seeing momentum all across the nation. Now, they started opening them up in October 2021 is when they started opening them up. 2022, a little bit more, but now the momentum is building and I'm experiencing it in my own small market and my students all across the nation. The wave is picking up, the wave of foreclosures. Now, there's not going to be as many, not going to be as bad as the 07, 08, and 09, but the opportunity to serve a lot of these people is now this year. And here's what I mean by opportunity to serve. We're buying most of these foreclosures, Joshua, not at the courthouse steps, not REO, bank-owned in the multiple listing service. I mean, they put them in the multiple listing service. You got everybody competing for it. We're buying our foreclosures directly from the people that are facing foreclosure from the time they've received a summons or notice of default up until the sale. That's the magic window of helping these people. And these people all the time tell us that they will sell us their property, their house, for what they owe, but we never buy it for what they owe. Now, all these foreclosures we buy are subject to the existing note. We'll use private money in second position to bring the payments or the arrears current. But even when they tell us they'll sell it to us for what they owe, we always put thousands of dollars, $2,000, $3,000 in their pocket because for goodness sakes, if I'm going to make $78,000, can I not put some money in those people's pocket and help them get back on their feet? Of course.
So with that, you're not actually having to go through an actual short sell payoff, like an actual short, like, okay, you're able to come clean with the note, enough equity in the property, make all that happen. So, I mean, you're really, everybody wins.
That's right. That's right.
Okay. Yep. I like that. Yep. So then, yeah. And, you know, this is theory, but I've got a theory that even if there's the volume of foreclosures, that we won't see the foreclosures hit the market in the same way. And the reason being is, okay, in about 2013, we saw this happen with HUD where, you know, because BlackRock became the majority institutional investor in HUD. So then we saw that move where they just started packaging up essentially anything that would meet BlackRock's different investment funds, directing to them. So then the only HUD REOs that hit the market were things that didn't meet their buy box. Well, since BlackRock, State Street, Vanguard, all co-owned, you know, right, you know, now have majority institutional ownership in Freddie and Fannie, you know. So then I'm like, okay, are those going to hit them? But you are positioning yourself before they even have a position to get to them. So you're like first to them with this strategy.
Oh, that's the whole deal. In this foreclosure market, our whole system and process is to reach out to these people before the other real estate investors even know about these deals, before they even know about them. That's why we physically go to the courthouse. We don't rely on online marketing sources. We physically go to the courthouse twice a week, Tuesdays and Fridays, and we track every open foreclosure file here in North Carolina. It's called the Special Proceedings Room in the Clerk of Court's office, and we track them and we mail them. Now, when we have more than one layer of motivation, we knock on the door and we outbound text and call. So a multiple layer of motivation would be, okay, they're already in foreclosure. There's one layer. Another layer example would be if you see the foreclosure is on the estate of and a person's name, then you know it's an estate. Well, those people aren't going to bring the payments current. So now we really want to skip trace those people, find the executor or executrix if there is one. And, you know, I've learned over the years, Joshua, the harder it is to find the owner of a property, the more profitable it is.
Yeah. Because nobody wants to do the hard work to hunt them down.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. So, I mean, you were really ahead of the curve on working with VAs and, you know, automating through VAs. And, you know, now that all this inflation and employee inflation and you got, you know, all these, the lowest work participation rate in United States history, you know, like just, it's gotten tough. It's gotten tough to go out and manage and hire and make things, you know, work, you know, financially, where VAs, you know, now we're seeing, you know, you were again way ahead of this. Now we're seeing a lot of people, you know, trying to jump into the VA game. But man, that can be very difficult if you don't have the right process, don't have the, you know, can you, because you've been doing the VA thing again for so long and you're really ahead of the curve on this. What is the key to having success with VAs?
Yeah. So a VA, of course, we're talking about virtual assistants. Virtual assistants is who we're talking about. And the great thing about having virtual assistants help you in your business is, first of all, You don't have to have an office. You don't have to go buy a desk. You don't have to buy them a laptop. You don't have to buy them a phone, right? They've already got everything they need. So what can a virtual assistant do to help you in your real estate business? Well, the list is very long. Number one, they can manage all of your leads that are coming in. I mean, for years, Joshua, I was just stupid. I kept up with my leads on post-it notes and on pieces of paper, right? I mean, for goodness sake, give me a break. So I have software that myself and all my students use, and all of your leads come into that software. Like when I have a Google ad come in, it automatically goes into my software, right? A Facebook ad automatically goes into the management software, keeping up with all those leads. Well, the virtual assistant can manage all that. And the virtual assistant can make sure that the follow-up texts are going out, the nurturing campaign, the follow-up emails are going out to these people. In addition to that, the virtual assistant can do all the skip tracing and can find these motivated sellers for you. The virtual assistant can make sure your Facebook ads are being placed consistently every day. Oh, my land, there's a magic word, consistent. If you don't have lead flow coming into your pipeline every day, you have a hobby and not a business. To have a business, we got to have seller leads coming in the pipeline every day. Your virtual assistant can make sure your Google ads are up and running, right? Your virtual assistant can manage your email for you. Stop and think how much time you spend on email a day, and how much of it are you going delete, 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 right? Your virtual assistant can manage your email for you and only have you look at what you know you want to look at. So it just really frees up your time to where I actually work in my business because of my virtual assistants less than 10 hours a week.
Yep. Yep. And then these VAs, you know, because VAs obviously could be in the States, but then, you know, a lot of times when people think of VAs, they're thinking of VAs in other countries that it's more affordable. You know, are these, you know, VAs in the Philippines? Are these VAs, you know, just kind of located all over?
Yeah, mine are in the Philippines, and I pay on average $10 an hour. And that's another thing. You don't have to have a virtual assistant for 40 hours a week, right? When I started using virtual assistants, I started out only using them 20 hours a week, right? So don't think about how much something costs you, right? Think about what that investment will get back for you. What's your return on getting your life back and buying your time back to where you can be really working on what's important? You know, somebody was asking me, I was a panelist a couple of weeks ago at a real estate investing conference, and they asked me, they said, Jay, what should real estate investors do less of? I said, 90% of what they do. It's what they should do less of, because most of the stuff you do running around doing, you're wasting time and just filling in the time. Only work on what you should be doing. So what should you be doing as a real estate investor? Looking at leads and looking at the map and making offers, right? I'm not on the phone talking to sellers. I've got a full-time local assistant that is my acquisitionist. That's another way I automate. I have a full-time acquisitionist that's talking to the off-market sellers, getting their information. So what do? Once a day, I go into my software and I look at all my new leads and I analyze what do I want to offer on those properties. I can look at, like yesterday, I looked at seven properties yesterday, and I analyzed all of them in 15 minutes, put in the software back out to my acquisitionist. Now the acquisitionist is negotiating with the sellers. So here's what I say. Be a 3D person. Dictate, delegate, and disappear.
Yeah. And I would imagine that your 10 hours are probably more powerful than if you were working 70 hours. Like, meaning, okay, you're focused only on the things that you should be focused on. Your superpowers, highest and best use of your time. Plus you're refreshed. You're mentally clear. You know, so those 10 hours are the equivalent of maybe a competitor that's trying to do all of this, working 70, 80 hours a week, and probably even more effective.
Yeah. When I started out back in 2003, I ran around with my hair on fire, right? That's why I ain't got much hair left, right? So I finally figured out, do what you're best at, do what you love to do what you're passionate about, and get out of the way of all the rest of it.
Yep. So then, all right. all this AI. I mean, AI has been around a long time with ChatGPT. It's, you know, now it seems to be accelerating. You know, are you using any type of AI when it comes to any of this in your business? And or, you know, do you see that becoming a way to incorporate, you know, whether it be underwriting some of these files, whether it be writing the contracts, whether it be, you know, what are ways that you see that as a real estate investor, you can kind of leverage some of these amazing tools that are coming out?
Yeah, I think AI is amazing. It's amazing. Now, I've got some friends and colleagues who are saying, well, it's a little scary too, right? As to where all this is going to go. Who knows where all this AI stuff is going to go? I'm having the most fun playing with ChatGPT. Like, you know, me and my wife, Carol Jo, we'll be at dinner with somebody and I'll say, well, you know, give me a subject or your favorite subject. And, you know, and I'll go into ChatGPT and I'll say, write me a funny song about Joshua Smith and GSD mode. And but, you know, but AI is such a baby when it comes to how can we use that as real estate investors. I haven't started testing using AI yet. I'm sure it's coming, but I want some of my other friends to be the guinea pig on figuring out how they're going to use it. And but I'm sure AI is coming as to how we're going to be able to use it and, you know, make our business and our lives even more, you know, seamless flow, if you will.
Yep. Awesome. Well, I know we're going long on time here, so I want to make sure that we talk about your new book, because that's something new that we didn't have, you know, since last time that we talked. So what led to the new book? Tell us about it.
Oh, my land. So I'm so excited. My book is titled Where to Get the Money Now. It's all about putting you on the fast track to private money. The subtitle is How and Where to Get Money for Your Real Estate Deals Without Relying on Traditional or Hard Money Lenders. Now, you can get it on Amazon, but don't go spend your money on Amazon. You can't download it. I learned a lesson, Joshua. Do not get a publisher that will not allow you to put your book in e-format. So the only way you can get this book is you actually get the real book. So I will ship it to you. It actually cost me $16 every time I ship this out because I send it priority mail. I autograph it for you and we ship it out. In fact, this will go out in less than 24 hours. But just go to Jay Connor. I'm an ER, not an OR. Go to www.jayconner.com/book, B-O-O-K. We'll ship it out to you. I think the site just has you cover shipping and handling for $6.95. So anyway, there's a gift for your audience. Where to Get the Money Now, Fast Track on Private Money, jayconner.com/book.
Awesome. Anybody that's watching and listening, if you just scroll below, we'll have that in the description of the show notes. So you can just click on the link and go right there. So no, that's amazing. So Vin, you know, last time that we talked, and it sounds like you are still doing this because you've referred to your students, you know, in our conversation today. So are you still doing, you know, the coaching in the schools where essentially like you're just packaged up everything in your head, all your processes, your systems, and just giving it to your coaching clients and teaching them how to do all this?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm doing it in person. I don't do it virtual because I haven't figured out how to actually teach what I do. But at my live events, I teach all four pillars of my business, how I find deals ahead of other real estate investors. Obviously, it's all about private money. The conference is called the Private Money Academy Conference. I teach how I sell any house in 3 days or less. And I teach rehabbing if somebody's interested in that. And I teach the automation. The third day is all about automation, how I'm running this business in less than 10 hours per week. I'm doing that live event 3 times a year, February, June, and October here in Eastern North Carolina. And when you order the book, you'll get all the information about how you can attend that $3,000 event for free with a measly $97 registration fee. So the book will give you all the information about the conferences as well.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. That's awesome, man. So, I mean, again, anybody that's watching or listening, we'll have that link so you can go snag that right away. So then, you know, we talked earlier about, you mentioned that, okay, you don't think that the market will be hit as hard as we saw during the great financial crisis, you know, and the reason why I ask, and I know that nobody's got a crystal ball, you know, so it's very difficult to answer this question, but it's the number one question I get on a daily basis of, you know, what do you think is going to happen and how do I prep for this? So I always ask our amazing guests, you know, that are tied to the real estate space, you know, their thoughts on where this is going and how people can be prepared or hedged for whatever that's, you know, come to fruition.
Well, there's one thing I do know that's backed and based on statistics, and that is we are going to have a short, regardless of what happens with foreclosures, we are going to have a short, and regardless of what banks do, I mean, thank goodness, I don't care what banks do because we use private money, but we are going to have a shortage of inventory for a very, very long time. The reason we're going to have a shortage of inventory is because of the demand that we've got for housing and the number of new housing starts that are going on. There's not that many going on, right? So because of the shortage of inventory that we're going to have for a long time, and this is all backed by statistics, if you're not following Jason Hartman, H-A-R-T-M-A-N, very good friend of mine, we're in two mastermind groups together. He is a brilliant economist, brilliant. And I heard him do a presentation just a little over a month ago. He's got all the stats to back it up. Why we're going to have a shortage of inventory. So as a result, we're not going to see a drop in pricing of houses like we saw, you know, way back in 2000, you know, 7, 8, and 9 in the early 2000s. It's because simple economics, supply and demand. I mean, here in our local area, right next door to us, Joshua, we got a little town called Havelock, North Carolina. I'm talking not like a super nice area, like bread and butter houses, maybe a little bit less than bread and butter houses. Well, just 3 weeks ago, there was only three houses over there. And I'm not talking oceanfront, ocean view. I'm talking like inland, only three houses on the market, less than $200,000. And they were all crap, right? And so, you know, I had a house that before COVID would have had an after repaired value of $150,000. I sold it 3 weeks ago for $234,900. Why? Supply and demand, no inventory, no change in the foreseeable future on that.
Yeah. And it makes me wonder too. Just the amount of, you know, now that, I mean, we were at a 70 year low as far as immigration, you know, but now that is re-speeding back up. I mean, what's it, you know, 16 million, you know, plus, you know, immigrants now coming to our country and it, you know, with inflation that really crushes third world countries. They, you know, start navigating to first world countries. So then it's like, yeah, I mean, we're already at the shortage. Well, then you start adding on to net gain of another 16 million new citizens coming in, you know, year after year, you know, it's just going to exacerbate.
That's right. That's right. I mean, and so that plays into the demand. And not only do you have the demand and shortage of inventory on houses, the rental market's the same way. I mean, we got a huge shortage for rentals as well. So as long as you know how to find the deals off market, all that's going to play into your hand as a super big advantage. If you're not a real estate investor, I don't know a better time to get into it than right now.
Yep. Love it. And those that watch and listen, again, we'll have Jay's information below. But Jay, just in case you're listening to this driving down the road, Jay Connor with an E, Connor.com/book. Is that correct?
You got it, Joshua.
All right. Well, Jay, truly appreciate your time. This has been absolutely amazing catching up with you. This has been a lot of fun, my friend.
Joshua, thank you so much for having me.
Are you feeling inspired by the knowledge you gained in this episode? Then head over to jconnor.com/moneyguide. That's jconnor.com/moneyguide. And download your free guide that shares 7 reasons why private money will skyrocket your real estate investing business right now. Again, that's jconnor.com/moneyguide to get your free guide. We'll see you next time on Raising Private Money with Jay Connor.